So would you have a recollection as to the smallest country to which you might have dedicated a full episode of Cut the Clutter? I know many of you will immediately raise your hands and say Israel. So Israel, it most likely is so far, and we've done more than one episode of Cut the Clutter. So the country we are talking about today is so small, it's about half Israel's size. It's also Israel's neighbor. I know you've guessed it by now, we are talking about Lebanon. And why are we talking about Lebanon? It's also one of those coincidences that we talk about Lebanon on the day which is the 75th anniversary of Hiroshima, or Hiroshima Day, the day the nuclear bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. So see a picture of that bomb explosion in Hiroshima, the mushroom cloud, and then you see just after that a picture of what happened in Beirut, the capital of Lebanon, the jewel of the Middle East, the Paris of Asia, etc., etc., etc. See what happened there day before yesterday. It looked just like a mushroom cloud, so much so that at that moment, immediately, a lot of people thought that this was some kind of a nuclear attack. So all of you know that this big explosion took place in the port of Beirut. The port of Beirut is in the heart of the city, not very different from, say, the port of Mumbai, which is in the heart of downtown Mumbai. So this go down apparently of ammonium nitrate blew up there, as we all know by now. But how big was the explosion? So on the night of the explosion, I was reading up some of the usual military and defense and strategic affairs sources that I follow, including Twitter handles. And one of the experts there estimated that this could be equivalent of about 240 tons of TNT, which is a lot, because the largest bomb that human beings have made militarily so far is 11 tons. So this was more than 20 times bigger than the largest bomb humans have produced, which is larger than the Daisy Cutter. So it's more than 20 times more than 11 tons. That was the first finding. But see, more that has come out since then. Now we know that this was, the explosion was the equivalent of 1 kiloton if it was a nuclear weapon. So a small nuclear weapon, that size of explosion. There's an expert quoted in the New York Times. I'm sharing some articles from the New York Times, Bloomberg, and some other sources, Gulf News also, with you today so that you can do a more detailed reading. Now, the amount of ammonium nitrate stored in this godown was 2,750 tons. And how that got there is a story in itself. That's a story which has as its central character a ship called Rosus, R-H-O-S-U-S, which is a ship and a story that could be straight out of Alistair MacLean or maybe a Licker kind of trope. It's one of those stories. Anyway, so this ammonium nitrate was stored in this godown. It went up for some reason. Now, there are many theories. Initially, it was said that maybe it was a welding accident, that somebody was welding something. It's a dockyard, it's a big godown, people weld things, and that led to sparks. Then there was a rumor that some crackers that were also stored there caught a spark. Of course, nobody can rule out either mishandling of it as an explosive or deliberate sabotage, because Lebanon is a very complex country and a very messed up country. Now, it will take some time to figure out what exactly caused this ammonium nitrate to blow up. But to put this in perspective, this is not the first accident or explosion involving ammonium nitrate. The biggest one that we know so far was probably 1947 in Texas, when nearly 2,000 tons had gone up, killing 581 people. And that was in 1947. Then there have been some recent ones, 2015 in Tianjin, again in the port, 800 tons of ammonium nitrate had gone up, killing 173 people and injuring 800. Others. There was also one terror attack that we know of using this material internationally, and there are some others. So that was in Oklahoma, America in 1995, when a terrorist called Timothy McVeigh put 2 tons of ammonium nitrate under the federal building there, killing 168 people. And if you see pictures of that federal building, you know how much explosive power that is. So that was 2 tons. What you had in Beirut was about more than 1200 of those bombs going off. 1200 of those Oklahoma Timothy McVeigh sized bombs going off. Now, once again, this was again not the only terror attack using this material. In India also, we have seen ammonium nitrate used by terrorists. It's also used by ISIS and Al-Qaeda groups elsewhere in the world. But India, specifically, we had the 2011 Mumbai blasts, 2011 Delhi blasts, 2013 Hyderabad blasts. In each of these, ammonium nitrate was found, and after that, Government of India in 2011 declared ammonium nitrate to be a special category explosive which somebody could buy and store only on a special license. Although it's a very commonly used chemical, particularly in the making of fertilizers. Now, initially people might have believed that what was stored in Beirut was meant for that purpose, but that wasn't the case. This was a more funny story, and or maybe a more intriguing story. So what was the story? So this ship called Rosas, this was a ship of Russian origin, but now under Moldovan flag, basically running cargoes, funny cargoes from this place to that, a beat up ship, not in a great shape. So this ship was rented by a rich Russian, as rich as Russians tend to be, particularly those who are living overseas, again in odd places. So this was a rich Russian living in Cyprus who rented this ship to carry this cargo of 2,750 tons of ammonium nitrate from Georgia, the former Soviet Republic, from Georgia to Mozambique. The buyer apparently was the Central Bank of Mozambique, and the proposed use was for industrial explosives. As we know, Mozambique is a big mining power. So that was the ostensible use. Then how did it find its way into Beirut? So again, the initial stories was it was confiscated. This story is more fun than that. This ship had reached as far as the Middle East. Now it had to cross the Suez Canal. And the captain of the ship found that he didn't have enough money to cross the Suez Canal. How does it sound? Doesn't it sound like one of those Alistair MacLean kind of plots? So because he did not have the money to cross the Suez Canal, he thought, let's go to Beirut. What will I do in Beirut? I will pick up some machinery from there, which has also to be transported to Africa, and I will get paid for transporting that machinery and then be able to pay my bills at Suez Canal. When the ship came to Beirut, I know all this from a New York Times story. Please read that story by Declan Walsh and Andrew Higgins that I'm sharing with you. So once he came there, he realized that the ship was so old and so badly in such a bad shape that this machinery could not be fitted on the ship. So essentially, the crew abandoned the ship. The owners abandoned the ship. It was scuttled. The cargo was confiscated by the Lebanese authorities, and it was sitting there. Now, given the way how confused things are in Lebanon, nobody is willing to take this story at face value. So many people would believe, as once again a story I'm sharing with you from Bloomberg would indicate to you, many would believe that this ammonium nitrate was meant for Hezbollah. Hezbollah is the strong Shia, very prominent militant terrorist group, which is basically opposed to Israel and keeps attacking Israel all the time. It's Iran backed, and Hezbollah has used ammonium nitrate both in the war in Syria, the civil war in Syria, but also against Israel. So presumption would remain that this was meant for Hezbollah, and then something went wrong. What went wrong we don't know as yet. So this ship left this here, and now this has gone up. And then you've seen this mushroom cloud. This mushroom cloud, it was initially feared to be nuclear, but it is not so. It was very powerful. As I said to you earlier, this was like 1250 or 1200 plus Oklahoma Timothy McVeigh sized bombs going off at the same time. But what happens is when ammonium nitrate explodes, it gets humid air, molecules of humid air to rub together and rise up. So that becomes the white mushroom cloud that you see. Also, it then creates waves of what is called as overpressure. And yet again, I know it from the New York Times story. Please read that story. It's a beautiful picturization of what happened in Beirut using video pictures. It's remarkable journalism, and I'm sharing it with you. Please see that. They calculate that these waves of overpressure are strong enough to break windows in any building 1.25 miles away. That's almost 2 kilometers away in that radius. So at least 5 big hospitals of Beirut fell in that radius and they suffered heavy damage. So if you see pictures before and after, you can see how brutal this explosion was. Now this context is very unfortunate, but this has given the opportunity to us to look at a country as small and as far away or as distant as Lebanon. Small on the Asian subcontinent, it is the smallest sovereign state by area on the continent, not as an island. Sri Lanka is much bigger as an island, and there are others. So this is a tiny country. It's also a fascinatingly complex country. It's a country of just about 7 million people, which is not about the same size as Israel, a bit smaller in terms of population, half its area. It has many problems though. It has some strengths. It is the most westernized and modern Middle Eastern country, certainly the most westernized modern Arab country, with a very talented population, with a human development index higher than any Arab country besides the 3 or 4 oil economies. Lebanese people are very talented. You find them all over the world. Lebanese diaspora is among the most widespread, and the Lebanese produce the finest professionals in every field that you can name in the world. For a small country, that's saying a lot. So with all this talent and all this wealth and location, it has the entire west coast of Lebanon opens out to the Mediterranean and therefore to Europe and the Western world, and a beautiful old tradition, culture, food, everything. Why does the country have such problems? So let me cut that down in 4 factors. One is demographics. Second is its neighborhood. Third is the weakness of its state. And fourth, which is connected to the third, is the quality of its leaders and leadership. Now, demographics, because from that might stem the factor number 3 and 4 as well. Now, every time I have to do a cut the clutter, I learn something new, particularly if it's about a country that I don't know very much about. I've covered the Middle East. I've covered a war in the Middle East, the first Gulf War. I've spent a lot of time in most Middle Eastern countries, but never in Lebanon, because at that point, Lebanon did not have trouble. So I've now read up on Lebanon and I'm fascinated what I'm reading. Now, Lebanon is one of those countries which follow what is called as confessional system of distribution of power. Confessional, like I'm confessing to you that I was ignorant that such a system exists until today when I read up on Lebanon. So confessional system, let me confess to you, which I knew nothing about. It means that people of each religious group have a share of power depending on their numbers. I now learn that Iraq has had some similar system since the departure of Saddam Hussein as well. But let's not go there. So if you look at Lebanon, it's a very well-defined system. 54% of Lebanon is Muslim. Again, a census has not been held in Lebanon since 1932 because of all these problems, but these are estimates. So 54% of Lebanon is Muslim. which is divided dead heat, 27%, 27% Shia and Sunni. Then there is 5.6% Druze tribals or Druze nomads. I know many of you have been reading about Druze militias and things. Now, the Druze are a nomadic tribe. The Druze follow a version of Islam which rose as an offshoot of Islam in the 10th century. But now if you read up on the Druze, you know that they follow an original kind of religious mix with elements of Islam, Christianity, and believe me, even Hinduism thrown in. But that's true of many nomadic populations all over the world. So 5.6% are the Druze, 40.4% are Christians. But again, Christians are not a monolith. Of the 40.4% Christians, 21% are Maronite, 8% are Greek Orthodox, and then there are small groups of other Christians, other denominations. So how this has been structured in this confessional system is that in Lebanon, the president is always a Maronite Christian. The prime minister is always a Sunni Muslim, as is Hassan Diab, the current prime minister. The speaker is always Shia. And then, because there are other kinds of Christians left, the deputy speaker and deputy prime minister are Eastern Orthodox Christians. So with this division of power, each one then doesn't have enough numbers to get elected, then they lean on the other. So today, for example, the prime minister may be a Sunni Muslim, but he is in power at the sufferance of Hezbollah, which is Shia, and thereby at the sufferance of the Iranians. Because the Iranians need the Hezbollah there to run their proxy war on Israel and to also control the situation in Syria, where they have a stake. Lebanese have very poor control over their territory, particularly in the south, where Hezbollah is and where the large Shia population is. And you know, that is the area bordering Bekaa Valley in Syria. That was the home of the civil war between 1975 and 1990 in Lebanon. And that is where, in 1982, the famous Bekaa Valley air battle between the Israeli and the Syrian air forces was held. So the prime minister doesn't really have the power to act on his own, and that is what's causing a further problem now. On Friday, UN-appointed tribunal, justice tribunal, is going to pronounce its order or its judgment in the assassination of Rafiq Hariri, who was the prime minister of Lebanon in 2005, and he was assassinated by an explosive device. The four suspects there under trial are Hezbollah people who are at large. Now, if those are pronounced guilty, obviously Hezbollah will not turn them over. Those are pronounced guilty, with this timing, it's going to cause the problem, the government of Lebanon, much bigger problems. And it's not as if they don't have problems of their own already. Lebanon's economy has been going down. In October last year, we had massive protests in Lebanon. I'm sure many of you saw those pictures. Because of the protests, then Prime Minister Harari had to resign. This is not Rafiq Harari, this is Saad Harari. He had to resign, and that's when Hassan Diab came in. Now, Lebanese economy and Lebanese currency have had a free fall in the last year. So there is an article today that you will see from Gulf News that I'll share with you, and on the screen that tells you that if you are paid 750,000, 7,50,000 Lebanese pounds 1 year ago, it was then valued at $750. Today it's valued at $75. So the currency has lost nearly 90% of its value. In the bank, the official value of the currency now is 1500 Lebanese pounds to a dollar, but the market value is more than 900. So the official value of the Lebanese pound to a dollar is 1500, but the street value or the market value is 10 times as much, and it's declining. And now this explosion will make things worse, because remember, Lebanon only produces 10% of its wheat, which is its staple crop, staple food. Lots of wheat, so 90% of its wheat is imported. Most of it was stored on the port which has now been destroyed. So this is the kind of crisis that's now come up in the heart of the Middle East, or one part of the Middle East which was not so violence ridden and which was not so crisis ridden right now. And this has come at a time when globally there are lots of other uncertainties. US is going for elections, etc., etc., etc. Lebanon is already with the IMF to ask for more money. And as my friend Bobby Ghosh, the former editor of Hindustan Times, says in his article today on Bloomberg, that global community will worry giving money in cash to this Lebanese government, given how corrupt they are. I told you the four factors that bedevil Lebanon, one of which is quality of its leaders, who are very corrupt and very incompetent, and nobody is quite popular to the extent of having the political capital to take hard decisions. They're all time servers, and there is a fear that any money given to Lebanon now will disappear into foreign banks, like it might have happened in the past. And finally, the fourth factor with Lebanon is its neighborhood, because on one side it has a tiny border with Israel, but that's a troubled border because Lebanon does not control that border anymore. The Iranians and Hezbollah control that border. On all the other sides, it has Syria. And Syria, as we know, is a country which is more messed up than any country in the world.